The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And a good evening, everyone. Hour two of Sports Talk 1240 right here on AM 1240. WGBB Radio. I am Jake Asman, and I'm alongside Dan Budick, and the two of us will talk sports with you for the next hour. We have a great show planned for you, and it's fitting that we are on the air tonight together, Dan, because 2 years ago on this exact date, sports director Robert Kowal hired both of us here at the station. So 2 years later, we're still doing shows here in West Babylon, and it's great to be on with you for an hour as the NBA Finals are underway, Game 2 going on, and we have a lot of baseball to talk about involving the Yankees and the Mets.
And this is also our first time back on WGBB since we graduated Ithaca College about 10, 15 days ago.
This is true. Before we start to really dive into everything, how does it feel to be a college graduate while still talking sports on the radio?
Well, I'm happy I can still talk sports on the radio as a college graduate, but crazy, 4 years of Ithaca College, June 4th, 2017, and we're both unemployed.
Yeah, unemployed. Living the dream. But 2 years on Sports Talk 1240, really, time flies. We were hired in the summer of 2015, so it's always really cool to come back and get an opportunity to do shows on these airwaves when we're home. But as always, we have a packed show and a lot of things to discuss. I'll throw out the phone number right away, 631-888-8811. We obviously know, as I just said, Game 2 of the NBA Finals underway. We will keep you updated on that game throughout. 5:24 to go in the second quarter, and Golden State is leading the Cavaliers 57-52. So we have our eyes on that game. We have the game on in the studio. If anything major happens, we will make sure we inform you right away. Obviously, it's a huge game for Cleveland, trying to not go down 0-2. To the Golden State Warriors, who, listen, even though last year the Warriors were up 2-0, it just feels differently this year with Durant being on Golden State. Cleveland obviously does not want to go back home down 0-2.
And you could see just the addition of Kevin Durant and how much of a plus he is to this Warriors team, especially, let's be honest, they got him to beat Cleveland, to put them over the top, to make sure they're better than Cleveland. And in Game 1, they just dominated. They dominated the Cavaliers, 38 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 9 rebounds for Kevin Durant on just 26 shots. And they're going to need an awful lot better out of LeBron James if they want to win tonight and even this series up in a game apiece.
No question about it. Then, of course, we have to talk some baseball, and we will certainly do that in this show. We'll start with the Mets. They're your team as you sit here in the studio wearing a Mets T-shirt. Not a good homestand for the Mets, and they really had an opportunity here to really get back into the swing of things. But right now, 24-31, they lose to the Pittsburgh Pirates at home today. I think it was 11-1 was the final score. Tyler Pill, the immortal Tyler Pill, made the start for the Mets. And at this point, you look at this team, and it's something that we've stressed a lot on the show before. They just do not have depth, especially in that starting rotation right now. They're waiting for Steven Matz. They are waiting for Seth Lugo. But it's getting late early for this team. We're now a third of the way in. The Mets sit 10.5 games back of the Nationals, which I think at this point you could kind of forget about the division. But more importantly, when you're a Met fan and you're looking at the standings for the wild card, they're now 8 games back of a wild card, and there are 7 teams in front of the Mets. It's getting late early, Dan.
It's getting late early, and you mentioned the starting pitching. I mean, they cannot get their starting pitchers deep in the games. I mean, this has been a problem since the beginning of the season. They lose Syndergaard about a month ago. We haven't seen Lugo. We haven't seen Matt. They're due back next week. That'll just add at least to something, add depth back to their starting rotation. But they can't get any depth out of their starters. They got guys going 4 2/3, 5 innings every time out. Their bullpen's getting taxed. And let's be real here. The offense has been pretty good. They've scored some runs. They're among the top in the National League in runs scored. It's been the pitching. Their bullpen and their starting rotation has been just dreadful. I mean, they're last in the league in starting rotation ERA, from their starters.
Which is unbelievable. Built around their pitching staff.
That's what I'm about to say. For a team that's built around pitching, you know, you look for that silver lining with this Mets team, and right now you can't find it because they're built on pitching, and they're not pitching. So they got to get Lugo back. They got to get Matz back. Hopefully that'll help. And then maybe you could slide Gesellman into the bullpen and add some depth to the middle of that bullpen. But right now, the Mets are a mess in the rotation. I mean, they had to start Tyler Pill for the second time today. He wasn't terrible his first time out, but how much can you expect out of a guy who wasn't even on the 40-man roster until 10 days ago.
So the Mets lose 11-1 today, but I want to take you back to yesterday's game from Saturday night. Terry Collins is managing desperate right now, and you saw that last night when he went to Addison Reed, his closer, for six outs. He pitched the eighth and the ninth inning because he probably thought realistically, we're not going to win today, being Sunday, because we have Tyler Pill pitching and our bullpen is shot. And their bullpen has been an issue. It's been an issue because of lack of talent. It's been an issue because of workage, overusage. But they have had some major flaws in that bullpen. And Terry's managing right now like he knows he's on the hot seat. Fair or not, this Mets team had a lot of expectations, and there have been a ton of injuries. And I don't want to blame Terry Collins, but I think you could start to really see kind of a chink in the armor of Terry Collins. He's managing desperate, and that's never where you want to be if you're a fan of the New York Mets right now.
I agree, and I think he's not only managing for his job, I think he realizes he's managing for this team's season. I mean, at 24-31, they've put themselves in this hole now through the early part of June where, when are they going to get back to 500? Is this team going to get back to 500 in the foreseeable future? I think they will. They're getting Cespedes back. They're getting Lugo back. They're getting Matz back. That'll help. You know, at least there's some guys coming back to put the Mets hopefully in a position where they can contend into the spring, into the summer for a wild card spot. But who knows? I mean, who knows? Who knows if Steven Matz is going to be healthy? Who knows if Seth Lugo is going to come back
and be healthy?
Well,
that's the issue, too, because you're counting on these guys if you're a Mets fan and you say, okay, what could we do that can get us better? Well, guys can come back from injuries. Well, we're talking about Steven Matz in particular that has never been healthy in his young major league career. So we're all of a sudden going to expect Steven Matz to come back and what? Be able to give you 150 innings from this point on? I don't know. He's never been able to do that in his career. He's always been hurt. And this idea that he's just going to be able to come back and rescue the season, I don't know if him alone could do that. I mean, they need a lot more than just Steven Matz and Seth Lugo. They need Seth Spinoza to be back and carry the team like he has the past two seasons when he's been in the lineup healthy. But even Yoenis Cespedes right now, even though he will help, there are just so many issues in that bullpen that no lead is safe. And if you're starting pitching, it's only going to give you five innings if you're lucky right now. That's just a terrible place to be if you're a fan of the Mets. And I'll ask you, Dan, I mean, what can you really do besides pray and hope that it somehow magically gets better in that pen? Because right now, even if you get healthy, that bullpen's not getting any better in the immediate future.
I think what the Mets are hoping is that getting Lugo back, getting Matz back will limit the amount of appearances that Blevins has to get, that Salas has to get, because they'll be pitching deeper into games if everything goes according to plan. And that's what I think the Mets are hoping, that Lugo's going to come back, that Matz is going to come back, that you could slide Gesellman in the bullpen, and hopefully they could pitch you a little deeper into games, into the sixth and seventh inning. I mean, it's one thing when your pitchers don't pitch deep into games, but it's another thing when they're going four innings and five innings. I mean, forget about pitching into the seventh and eighth. They're not getting guys into the sixth inning. It's terrible what has happened here with this Mets rotation, and it's tough to blame Terry Collins, I'm with you, because of the fact that the injuries have happened, and it's not his fault Matt Harvey can't pitch. It's not his fault, you know, that he has to go to Tyler Pill on a day where the Mets are looking to win a rubber game. So there's a lot of issues with the Mets pitching that I think it shies away from Terry Collins. I just think he's been dealt a pretty bad hand here early in the season, just with the injuries that have happened to this team, and really poor performances because they still got Harvey in there, and Matt Harvey is not pitching good. He's been just terrible. And it also leads you to talk about how much longer the Mets going to pitch Matt Harvey. Is he going to guy that's going to go have to go to the bullpen in the foreseeable future? If you get Matz back and you get Lugo back, I mean, Gesellman's giving you two starts where he's pitched into the sixth and seventh inning. Maybe Harvey's the guy that's got to go to the bullpen. I really don't know.
Isn't it amazing, though, when you mention Matt Harvey and the talk of him maybe having to go to the bullpen? Not because they need him there, because he's been so bad as a pitcher. He's been horrible. And this is a guy that was the Dark Knight. This was a guy that started an All-Star game. This was a guy that was a major reason why the Mets went to the World Series just 2 years ago. And here we are in June of 2017 talking about Matt Harvey having to go to the bullpen because he's been so bad. He's been awful, and it's amazing.
He's been dreadful.
What has happened to this guy? He's still throwing hard. He's still throwing 95, 96 miles per hour. I agree with you, and you've said this before in the show. It has to be mental at this point because he just does not look like this guy that we used to intimidate batters, used to go up there and say, you know what, my best stuff is better than whatever you could do in that batter's box. He just looks like a totally different pitcher right now, and he's one of the main reasons why this Mets team is 24-31 you know, a third of the way through the season.
Absolutely. And now, you know, because Syndergaard got hurt, because you didn't have Mats, because you didn't have Lugo, you know, last year when Harvey pitched terrible before he got hurt, the Mets were still playing well because everyone else was pitching well, and it kind of was an issue that kind of got brushed to the side until he needed that surgery and he was out for the season. But because of the injuries the Mets have had and the poor performance, you know, we have to look at Matt Harvey as a big reason why. He just has not pitched well. DeGrom, he didn't pitch well his last time out, but he's been better. At least he's been able to go out there and give you quality starts. I mean, Matt Harvey, it's tough to find a quality start in his season thus far. He pitched okay a couple of starts ago. I mean, you want to call 5 innings, 2 runs okay. But the problem is when he does pitch okay, he's at 105 pitches in the fourth inning.
And are we really settling for just okay with Matt Harvey? I mean, we know how good this guy was. I just said it before. Started an All-Star game, has been a perennial Cy Young contender by many. And we're talking about a guy that just pitching okay if he can get through 6 innings and give up three runs. If he can give you a quality start, which, oh, by the way, still a 4.50 ERA, oh, we'll take that from Matt Harvey. It's just amazing what has happened to this guy. And you know what? I thought he was going to have a great year. I know you said on the show before that you thought he was going to have a great year because it looked like he was finally healthy and he's trying to get paid in a couple of years when he hit free agency. But the way this guy is pitching right now, you just have to wonder if the Mets have to do whatever they can to just get rid of him and get him out of New York, because I don't know if he's ever going to be effective here again. He just looks lost, and maybe a change of scenery is kind of what he needs. But, you know, right now, you said it before, they don't really have much else as an option to throw into that rotation. So as long as Matt Harvey is healthy, they're going to keep throwing him out there because there's really no one else better. What, you're going to put Tyler Pill into the rotation full time? I mean, the Mets just have some major issues in that rotation, and Matt Harvey has been a big part of it, but he's not going anywhere in the time being.
Yeah, but the only thing I could think of is Lugo and Matt's come back, and Harvey's still not pitching well. I would not be shocked if they push him to the bullpen here. I mean, the Mets are playing for their season, and Terry's managing in a lot of aspects for his job, so they can't really afford to mess around. I think what they have to do is they have to really look at this situation from a holistic standpoint. Matt Harvey is not giving the Mets a chance to win every
day. Would you move him to the bullpen?
I think I would. He's been that bad.
Wow.
And you're getting two starters back, and you have to hope, and you have to imagine that even if Lugo and Gazelle, and even if Lugo and Mats, excuse me, aren't great, they'll be better than what Matt Harvey has given you. I mean, Matt Harvey was just dreadful 2 days ago on Friday against the Pirates. He was terrible. I mean, you just can't keep throwing him out there if he's going to be that ineffective. You just can't. They got to figure out something else. If it's Mats and Lugo coming back and him going to the bullpen, they have to figure out a way to write this, because right now, with the way the team is playing, you just can't afford to keep putting Matt Harvey out there every fifth day. He's terrible. He's not giving the Mets a chance to win on a night-in and night-out basis. And if that's the case, and the Mets are playing for their season here, maybe they got to make a move.
Well, a move they could make, speaking of hitting, is the two guys they have down at AAA, and Dominic Smith and Rosario playing the shortstop position. If you look at these Mets prospects, they look like they're ready to go now. The Mets have a major void in the left side of their infield. You look at what's going on right now with this Mets season and this team. You know, could the spark plug finally be bringing up one of these guys from AAA? To make a Yankee comparison, and we'll get to the Yankees in a moment here, the Yankees brought up Gary Sanchez last year when their season was over. They traded everyone at the deadline, and Gary Sanchez came in and was unbelievable. We all know what happened. Gave that team a spark, though. We've seen it before where sometimes bringing up that prospect can give you a spark. Sometimes changing the quarterback in the NFL could give you that spark if you go to the backup and maybe you could ride the hot hand. You know, could you see a scenario where the Mets finally call up some of their top prospects to try and save what has been a major disappointment of a season?
I think they would have called up Rosario and Smith already if the pitching had been good or has been good, and they're just not scoring runs and they want to inject some life into their lineup. I would understand the move, and I still would get the move if they do it now. I think what is the hesitation from Collins and really Alderson is the fact that if they call up Smith and Rosario, it's not filling the void of Matt Harvey. It's not filling the void of Noah Syndergaard. And it's not filling the void of the fact they need guys that could eat up innings. And I think the team might still struggle. So I see why they've been hesitant to do it. But I think you keep losing games and you fall further and further out of first place or out of a playoff spot, You have to think, when are you calling up Dominic Smith, who's hitting 308 with a 362 on base percentage? Ahmed Rosario is hitting 348 with a 387 on base percentage. So maybe we're getting to that point. I mean, it's June 4th. You have to think that if the Mets are still playing seven games under 500 in a month from now, they might be more inclined to call up a Smith or a Rosario. We'll see.
Phone lines are open. 631-888-8811 is the number to call. Once again, 631-888-8811. We're talking Mets right here on Sports Talk 1240 till 10 p.m. We're about 17 minutes into the program, and the phone lines are open. Let's go out to our first caller of the night, Gary in Melville. Gary, start us off.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Gary. What's going on?
Listen, I'm a frustrated Met fan. I was listening to you guys. Yeah, I hear what you're saying about the pitching, but I think it starts at the top. I think Sandy's got some questions to answer, why he's not bringing up these guys. We've got three guys in the lineup batting 200. Enough's enough. Okay, they're more concerned with firing Mr. Met than worrying about firing the manager and the pitching coach. What do you think?
I don't know. I understand to a certain degree, like the point I was making before. The void is in the rotation. The lineup, really, even though they have some guys hitting under 200 and they've had some issues there, you know, they're hitting pretty good with runners in scoring position. They're actually, their offense, they're hitting 10 points higher than they were a year ago at this time. So the offense hasn't really been the issue. I mean, 2 days ago, they were down 4-1. They have a five-run inning, six-run inning. They score, they take the lead 7-4, and then they give up 8 runs in the fifth inning. Next thing you know, they're down 12-7. I mean, I just think from watching these games, clearly the issue with the Mets has been their starting pitching. It's not even, if they have average starting pitching, I think they're five games better than they are right now. That's how bad their starting pitching has been. I mean, worst in the National League? We were talking about a team, Gary, that coming into the season might have the best rotation we've seen in 15 years in the major leagues.
Exactly.
Just been brutal.
Don't you think it's time for Dan Worthen to hit the road now?
Maybe. It might be a move that they make in the upcoming months. I don't know. I mean, another thing that's very peculiar, I think, about these Mets starters this year is they're starting to walk guys. I mean, Jacob deGrom, even when he goes seven innings, he's walking five guys. You know, the walks have just been awful, and they've come back to hurt them time after time, whether it's been in the rotation or in the bullpen. I think they got to do something in the next month or so. If they're going to continue to play this poorly, maybe it's firing Worthen, maybe it's bringing up Smith or Rosario, but, I mean, they cannot continue to go into July and August with this type of performance. They have to play better. Somehow, they got to find a way to play better and fight their way back in this race. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Neither do I. But I can only hope, because it's too early to talk Giant football yet.
A little bit. Give it a month or so.
Yeah, we can always talk about Odell and not show up for OTAs if you're interested in that. Exactly. Thanks for the call, Gary. 631-888-8811 is the phone number. Let's move into the Yankees, though, a little bit, as I know a lot of people want to get in and talk some New York Yankees baseball. Just to touch on what has gone on with this team, we all know what happened up in Toronto today. The Yankees lost 3-2, and they split the four-game set against Toronto. So they're going back home. They go 3-4 on this seven-game road trip. They have the off day tomorrow. They will be back at the stadium starting on Tuesday, and a huge series coming up against the Boston Red Sox. Why is it so big? Well, the Yankees' lead in that division is only two games, and it's now Boston that's in second place. So they're playing for really first place starting on Tuesday, and it's even bigger because you look at what the Yankees have going for them in that Tuesday matchup. Masahiro Tanaka gets the start on Tuesday. We know the story with him, too. He has been awful. And if I would have told you coming into this season that you would look at Masahiro Tanaka and he would be the weak link of this Yankees starting rotation, you would look at me like I had six heads. But it's been true. He's been awful, and obviously his last start was horrific after he really had a very good start against the Oakland A's in his previous one, but it all seemed like everything just kind of went back to normal, and by normal it means back to him just being terrible. So it's a huge start for Tanaka. He did pitch great up in Fenway Park against the Red Sox earlier this season in April. But now he's facing the Red Sox at home. He has really struggled. And, of course, the Yankees facing Boston, it's always fun. And now this is a huge homestand coming up for the Yankees that get started, as I said, on Tuesday.
And if there's a game and a series for Tanaka to turn his season around, boy, would it be great for the Yankees if he could give them a good start on Tuesday. They really need him. And even though they've played very well, they've exceeded a lot of people's expectations up to this point in the season, if they want to seriously have a run at this division, they need Masahiro Tanaka to pitch like an ace. They need him to be that, you know, stopper if they need, or that go-to guy towards the end of the season to spin them 8 shutout innings. They need that Tanaka back. They can't afford to have him in the rotation with a 6.34 on run average. They need Tanaka to pitch like an ace, and they're very fortunate that CeCe and Pineda and Severino have been so solid, because it's really kind of put a cover up on how bad Tanaka has been this year.
It just is amazing what has happened to him. And Tanaka, every time you think he figured it out, like I said, not his most recent start, but the start before that, he was great. I think he had a career high 13 strikeouts against the A's, and he pitched really well, and you thought, oh wow, he's back on track. And then his most recent start, he just gets tattooed against the Baltimore Orioles last week. And now listen, Masahiro Tanaka has to figure it out, because if the Yankees are going to keep throwing him out there when he has an ERA of over 6, you know what? He has to pitch better. He's being paid all this money. We all know about his opt-out clause, and forget about that. He's opted in if this continues.
Oh, yeah. Why would he opt out of how much money?
Yeah, I think it's about $22 million a year.
I think he's in on that one.
You look at him as from the standpoint of the Yankees needing him. They do. I know these other guys in the rotation, like a Sabathia, like a Pineda and Severino, they have all pitched well. But you need to know that Tanaka is your ace. You need to know that he's your given. And the way he's pitched, it makes you really scratch your head, because the Yankees say he's healthy. Tanaka says he's healthy. We know he's pitching with a partially torn UCL in his pitching elbow, but he's pitched with that now for 2 years, and he's been fine. He's been very good. He had a very good season last year. So I'm sitting here as a Yankee fan and as a baseball fan watching these starts, and you just wonder what's happening with Tanaka. Just like we talked about with Matt Harvey, it may be being mental. With Tanaka, maybe it's mental as well. He's just in some sort of funk right now, and it's really inexplicable. You can't explain it.
You can't explain it, and the fact that he's been really the weakest link in this rotation, a rotation that includes Jordan Montgomery, who back in February and January, we didn't even know who this guy was. And here he is, he's pitching really good for the Yankees.
Even the most diehard of Yankee fans wouldn't know who Jordan Montgomery
and
was.
And it's just amazing that Tanaka's been such the weak link in this rotation. But you said it, they need him to pitch better. They need him to turn it around. And Drew Pomeranz, who he's going up against on Tuesday, he struggled this year. But they really need Tanaka to pitch a good starting and get his season turned in the right direction. Because if they get Tanaka going and he starts pitching well with the way the rest of the rotation has pitched, there's no reason why the Yankees can't win this division.
No question about it, especially with the way that Aaron Judge has played. And he's no longer in the conversation for just Rookie of the Year. He's in the conversation for the MVP, especially with Mike Trout missing so much time. But Judge has been incredible. Matt Holliday has been great. Gardner's been great. You look up and down the lineup, and guys are just producing right now. All these veterans with a mixture of the youth.
Except Chris Carter.
And Carter, you know, he'll be DFA'd soon. You know, Greg Bird, hopefully he's coming back, and Tyler Austin's getting ready down in AAA. He's tearing the cover off the ball, so Chris Carter may not be on the team that much longer, but you look at this Yankees offense, they're scoring a ton of runs. If Tanaka could turn back into Masahiro Tanaka, all of a sudden this team just gets to another level, when a lot of people, and myself included, thought coming in that if the Yankees were competing for a playoff spot in September, it'd be a good year. Well, now, you know, if Tanaka comes back to being Tanaka, with the way this starting rotation has pitched, you're talking about a team that can contend for a division, and who knows what happens once you get into the postseason.
Now, this week, I was keeping my eye, I was looking at some Yankees minor league numbers. And this guy, Chance Adams, have you gotten a chance to look at his numbers?
He has been remarkable. And when Yankee fans call up the show and they ask, well, could you see the Yankees making a big-time trade for a pitcher? I think they'll try and fix it in-house with a guy like Chance Adams. I don't know if you have his numbers up in front of you.
I just pulled him up.
But he has been remarkable. They skyrocketed him up their system. He's all the way up in AAA now, where he's been dominating. If somebody gets hurt or someone continues to struggle, they could go to Chance Adams, and he's a guy they love, and they think that he's a legitimate, bona fide starting pitcher in this league.
He's made 4 starts in AAA. He's made 7 starts overall, 8 starts overall this year. He's 7-1 with a 1.24 ERA. In AAA, in 4 starts, he's 3-1 with a 1.57 earned run average. AA, he was 4-0 with a 1.03. This guy's got a career record of 23-3 with a sub-2 ERA.
All the talk
in the
is
minor
about
leagues.
Gleyber Torres. Well, let me tell you something. Chance Adams is the starting pitcher that the Yankees are very high on. We've seen Severino take that next step this year after a brutal previous year. He looks great, and now if you bring up Chance Adams and he turns into something, the Yankees are building something going forward, and that's ultimately what you want when you look at this team. Quick update, halftime in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. The Warriors lead this one 67-64, so it looks like we're going to have a close game here.
At least at half.
It's closer than it was in Game 1 at halftime, that's for sure. So it's 67-64, Warriors leading. The number to call, 631-888-8811. He's been on hold for a little while. Let's go out to Jake in Connecticut to talk some Yankees. Jake, what's going on?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Hey, Jake.
First time, long time, but I just want you guys to know I followed you guys for a long time. You'll always be Hall of Famers in my book. You guys have been great.
Oh, that's it. You're a sweetheart. Thanks for that compliment. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. What's on your mind?
Congrats on everything. I just want to talk to you, Jake, about Jordan Montgomery. The guy was awesome yesterday, shutting down a really right-hand heavy Blue Jays lineup. And you want to talk about this kid. Joe Girardi was asked, I think before the last start, if Montgomery struggles with not to call up Chance Adams. And he laughed off the reporter, which is understandable given how good Montgomery's been.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jake. And I think when you look at Jordan Montgomery, I like what I've seen from him. He's not just a guy that's going to try and blow you by with his stuff. He doesn't throw overly hard, but he's got a good four-pitch mix. He throws his curveball, throws his nice changeup. He has decent fastball velocity. He's not a guy, as I said, that's just going to just blow something by you, but he's a real starting pitcher. And I joked before that even diehard Yankee fans couldn't have known who Jordan Montgomery was in the offseason, but it's true, and he's pitched so well, and I like the fact that the Yankees said they were going to have an open competition for that fifth starter spot, and Montgomery pitched the best in spring training, and he earned the opportunity to be the fifth starter, and he's pitched really well, and obviously, he's just a rookie, he's going to have his ups and downs, but we've seen Montgomery look really good, two out of his last three starts. I like what I've seen from him. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I really think right now, if the Yankees want to get Chance Adams involved a little bit later on in the season, I could see them going to a six-man rotation to get Chance Adams involved. And what would happen is Tanaka would then get that extra day, and we've seen it. The stats back this up. Masahiro Tanaka pitches much better when he's pitching on 5 days rest as opposed to making his regular start on just 4 days rest. So that's something the Yankees could do if they want to go in that direction. But if somebody gets hurt, you know Chance Adams is going to be the first pitcher in the minors that gets that call up to the big leagues.
And the other thing, Jake, I wanted to ask you, a lot of made, especially in the New York media, and I guess well-deservedly so, about the difference with Tanaka when he pitches with Austin Romine or Gary Sanchez, and he just got rocked with Romine behind the plate in Baltimore. Is there any chance we see Romine behind the plate on Tuesday? It's got to be Sanchez, right?
I think it has to be Sanchez. I mean, you have a day off on Monday, so there's no longer this day game after a night game you have to worry about. And listen, I know that Joe Girardi tried to make Tanaka comfortable in his most recent start by giving him Romine again, but you know, how do you explain how well Masahiro Tanaka pitched last season when Gary Sanchez was called up, and Gary Sanchez caught all Masahiro Tanaka's starts? So I don't buy into this idea that Tanaka can't work well with Gary Sanchez. I expect to see Gary Sanchez behind the plate on Tuesday against the Red Sox. They'll need his bat in the lineup to help score some runs, and Tanaka just has to pitch better. You can give him the greatest catcher of all time. Give him Yogi Berra behind the plate if Yogi, you know, was still alive out there. Give him Johnny Bench. Give him any catcher you want. And it doesn't matter because he has to execute. He has to make pitches. And, you know, right now he has struggled, but you know, what better place to get going than against the Red Sox on Tuesday night?
Well, you got that exactly right, Jake. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Dan, hopefully the Mets keep turning around for you.
I don't know. I wouldn't hold my breath there, but thanks for the call, Jake.
But, I mean, Jake O'Carlo makes a great point. You know, Austin Romine and Gary Sanchez, it doesn't really matter. Tanaka has to pitch better.
Well, and I think if the numbers backed it up, I mean, he got shelled the other day and Romine was behind the plate. If he was really that much better with Sanchez, with Romine.
He was this season up until that start.
He was up until that start, which tells me maybe
which wasn't a big sample size. We're talking about a third of the season. How many starts did he really make?
Exactly. So it's not a large enough sample size, and the fact that he got shelled the other day with Romine behind the plate, listen, if he's not pitching that much better with Romine behind the plate, you can't afford to keep Gary Sanchez on the bench if you don't have to. I mean, he's the type of bat you need him in the lineup every day. And you're right. If Tanaka's going to pitch well, he has to get better. I don't think it really matters at this point who their catcher is. Just one more point, though, about Montgomery. I don't think it's a coincidence that Montgomery has pitched a lot better since the Chance Adams rumblings have come into the mix about maybe getting called up and taking his spot as the Yankees' fifth starter. And you like to see that. You like to see a young pitcher, maybe with his job on the line, start to buckle down. He's pitched, you mentioned it, two of his last three starts have been very good.
631-888-8811 is the phone call. Before we take a quick break, just want to update everyone on the starters the Yankees announced for the Boston Red Sox series. Of course, Tanaka going on Tuesday, as we've been discussing. CC Sabathia will make the start on Wednesday, and on the Thursday game, Michael Pineda will get the start in the finale of that series. But once again, the number is 631-888-8811. We're going to take a quick break here on Sports Talk 1240. When we come back, more of your phone calls. We'll talk NBA Finals, update you on everything going on. Make sure you listen to the podcast tomorrow if you missed any of the show. We'll be right back with more Sports Talk 1240 right after these words.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now back to the show.
Hour two of Sports Talk continues right here on AM 1240 WGBV. Jake Asman joined alongside Dan Budick, taking you until 10 p.m. We were just talking about the Mets and talked a lot about the New York Yankees as well. We mentioned the halftime score of Game 2 as we have the game on in the studio. We're watching everything unfolding here. And before we went to break, we said it was 67-64 Warriors, third quarter, moments away from starting, but LeBron James has carried the Cavaliers, as you would expect, in this game early on. He has 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 10 assists at the half. Kevin Love also has 15 points, so it's been LeBron and Kevin Love who have been the two leading scorers for the Cavaliers. And then you look at the Warriors, and you know Kevin Durant's having another great game. He had 15 points in that first half. So did Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson even got going with 11 points on 4 of 6 shooting. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty good second half. We're excited to follow along, and of course, once we get up the air, we'll watch the end of the game, of course, but we just want a competitive finals because we know what happened in Game 1, we know what's happened this entire playoffs, and if we don't get at least a long series here between these two teams, I mean, what a disappointment it would be for the NBA.
And we were expecting such a great finals because of the fact the playoffs were so bad, and we knew this was going to be the finals matchup a year ago. Might be the finals matchup next year, too. Who knows?
And the year after that.
Maybe
it may never end.
Maybe pencil it in the next 3 years. I don't know, but I mean, we need a good series
here. You mean
here.
To tell me you don't think the Knicks will be in the finals in the next 3 years, Dan?
If they get LeBron James, I would say. Yes. But seriously, on a serious note, I mean, we need a good series here. Game 1 was a disaster, and Game 2 so far, LeBron James putting the Cavaliers once again on his shoulders like he did the last 3 games of the finals a year ago, and that's what they need. They need great performances from LeBron James because this Warriors team is not only just as good as they were last year, but we talked about it. The fact that they have that second dimension, really third dimension, I should say, in Kevin Durant, and the way they use him on offense was on full display in Game 1. He's been so hot with the basketball so far through the first game and a half here of this NBA Finals. And they need LeBron to be on his A game. They cannot afford for LeBron James to have a subpar performance in any of these games. That's how important he is to the Cavaliers. And they also need Kevin Love to play a heck of a lot better than he did in Game 1. So we'll see. Hopefully it wraps up and we get a good series.
631-888-8811, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. Ben in Brooklyn. Ben, what's going on?
Hey, guys. First time, long time. How's it going?
Hey, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just something in my mind tonight. I feel like the past 2 years, I've been talking to my friends about Klay Thompson being a huge X factor for the Warriors in the finals. And he's kind of shrunk a little bit. I mean, in this series, he's played tremendous defense so far on Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, LeBron James even. But what do you guys think about the fact that if he gets going offensively, I feel like that's just one too many bodies for Cleveland to worry about defensively.
And not even just Klay Thompson, he didn't even have a great game in game one. I didn't see how many points he had. I think he had under 10 points. So that just goes to show you they can win without Klay Thompson being on that level just because of the bodies they have on the floor, adding Kevin Durant, having Draymond Green, and, of course, Steph Curry. They're a tough team to beat, and they come at you from all angles, Ben, and that's why it's such a tough matchup for the Cavaliers, and that's why you need LeBron to give you LeBron-type performances. You know, they can't afford for him to play subpar, and he's, you know, come out firing in game two, and I think he knows that these games, especially this game heading back to Cleveland for game three, this is an important win for them to get. They do not want to go down 2-0 here.
Yeah, you mentioned it, Ben, about Klay Thompson. I mean, him partly not being the player that he is, maybe you expected to be the almost that X factor, just because of the look at this team right now. You have Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green is not really a scoring option, but Durant kind of comes in and takes the shots away from Klay. And I give Klay a lot of credit. It hasn't affected his defense, and he's still going out there, and he's contributing in other ways. But he no longer needs to be the Splash Brothers of old with Steph Curry because, you know, Kevin Durant, you can make a case, is arguably the best player on the team, and he's the guy that joined them in free agency.
No, absolutely. But imagine if Klay Thompson had one of those nights on any one game. This is one of those nights where he goes, you know, 8 of 10 from the deep. He's dropping 30, 35, 40 points. Who does Cleveland have to put on him to stop him in a game like
they
that?
They can't.
They don't. That's the main issue. Cleveland does not have enough guys to be able to make that adjustment there. And you mentioned Klay Thompson, if he has one of those games, well, one of those games, like he scores 60 points in only three quarters like he had earlier, sure, he's capable of being a great player at any given moment. But that's what makes the Warriors so special. They could survive a bad game from Klay Thompson. They could survive a bad game from Steph Curry if Draymond Green and Durant play well. The Cavs cannot survive a bad game from LeBron. When LeBron in game one turned the basketball over 8 times, there was no chance Cleveland was going to have a shot in that game. Not when they turned the ball over collectively as a team 20 times. So the Warriors' depth, it speaks for itself. For the Warriors to lose this series, their main guys, the Kevin Durants, the Steph Currys, and the Thompsons, they need to have bad games simultaneously, not just one of them or two of them. They all need to have bad games. And the chances of that happening are probably slim to none, especially at home. So you just hope that Cleveland, if they can't steal game two, they better win games three and four, because if they don't, we're really looking at a series that could probably only go, you know, 5 games and, you know, God forbid it goes 4 games. But listen, if the Warriors win game two tonight, and now they're already up 81-73 in the third quarter, they go back to Cleveland and steal game three, no matter what happens, the series is over. So, I mean, you got to look at Cleveland's chances and say, listen, they don't get the split on the road. You know, game three is a must-win, but a lot of people didn't pick them to win tonight. They were a heavy underdog for a good reason.
Well, yeah, because Golden State is probably the dominant team you guys have probably ever seen in your lives. You know, I think the only way Cleveland's going to win the series is in 7, but I could totally see Golden State just heating up to that level where they're just untouchable and finishing this in 4 or 5
games. They haven't lost a game yet in the playoffs, and so you're probably right.
And the way they've played through this first game and a half, I mean, they never trail. They play up by 4 or 5. They have Cleveland chasing them the whole game, and because of the shooters they have, because of the way they can score the basketball, they make a 5-point lead, a 15-point lead in 20 seconds.
Instantly.
That's how talented this team is. And, in a 7-game series, that's so demoralizing. If you cut a big lead to 5, and the next thing you know, 20 seconds later, it's back to 10, to 15.
Exactly.
It's so demoralizing for a team to keep playing from behind, even for the great LeBron James to be coming back from behind every night. They had to do it in the finals last year. But I just don't get the sense.
Well, they did it last year.
Well, they had to. They were down 3-1. They came back to win the series. But you get the feeling, Ben, that if this series goes to 3-1 or 3-0, I mean, Cleveland's got no shot of forcing a 7th game. I don't care if it's 3-1 or I just can't see them forcing a 7th game. I don't think we're going to see what we saw a year ago.
The crazy thing is, if anyone is going to do it, it would be LeBron. LeBron, if he wants to, can put any team in the league on his back and take him to the finals, I think.
He absolutely can. My issue is on the defensive side of the ball. You mentioned it. They can't get stops. They can't get consistent stops. They can't get takeaways. They haven't been able to snatch the ball away from the Warriors thus far. And it's a huge problem when you have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green scoring the basketball like they do. It's just it's too much for the Cavs to handle.
Thanks for the call, Ben.
Yeah, go on.
And yeah, thanks so much for checking in with us. But, you know, I mean, Ben makes some good points. You look at Cleveland and their offense, as good as it's been in the playoffs, it doesn't compare to what's going on with this Golden State team. And they're up right now 83-73, starting to pull away in that third quarter. This was a game that was a three-point game at the half. Now it's a 10-point game as we still have 9 minutes to go here in the third quarter. Well, let's go back to the phones. We'll keep the conversation going. Nathan in New Jersey wants to talk some sports here on Sports Talk 1240. Nathan, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call. How you doing?
Good. What's up, Nathan?
I'm picking the Cavs in six, but right now they're not looking good again like they did in game one. I don't know what they can do, but hopefully they can come back and win today. This is a must win for the Cavs. They had to treat it like a game seven, so hopefully they can put the defensive mindset on and then focus on defense. So I don't like. The bench, I feel like the bench needs to step up. Maybe they can, I brought up an idea earlier this morning saying, why not put LeBron, give LeBron the ball most of the time and play Kyrie off the ball so Kyrie can score. So what do you think of that idea, playing LeBron at point guard and then Kyrie Irving playing off the ball?
Well, I mean, listen, I don't think they're going to have LeBron bringing the ball up unless they're in desperate need. And that's not going to be until they're facing elimination down 3-1 or wherever that case may be. I think for right now, I don't know how they're going to get stops. And we've continued to not see them be able to get stops through this second game. And thanks for the call, Nate. We appreciate it. It's just, it's tough. It's a tough task for the Cavaliers. We said it going into this series. How are they going to stop Clay? How are they going to stop Draymond? How are they going to stop Steph? How are they going to stop Durant? And you can't stop all of them. You know, Cleveland's very talented, but they don't have the bodies to match up with the Warriors the way they did a year ago. Adding Durant is a huge difference maker, and he is a dominating force. It's not often a championship-caliber team as the best player in the league, arguably the best player in the league, and that's just what the Warriors did.
I mean, you look at this team, and not only did they just add, you know, Kevin Durant, but it's not like just any other normal free agent, you know, going to another team. This was a team that won 73 games, and we don't need to spend, you know, the remaining 20 minutes of the program rehashing the storyline. We all know what happened. But when you take a player of Kevin Durant's ilk and you throw him on the Warriors, they're supposed to do this. And listen, you could say, well, he put the pressure on himself and all this. And yes, he did. Fine. Kevin Durant has more pressure on himself. He has to win a championship or his season's a failure. But you know what? When you have Steph Curry and you have Klay Thompson, you have Draymond Green, how much pressure is it really? Because you know what? Not only are you supposed to win a championship, but you were a heavy favorite to do so over the best player in the world. How often is the best player of their own sport a heavy underdog in a championship series? It never happens except here in the NBA because Kevin Durant decided to join the Golden State Warriors. So you know what? If the Warriors win, I'm not going to be surprised. I picked them to win in five. If LeBron finds a way to somehow pull this off, I think the conversation about him being the greatest player of all time is fair, and not only can a case be made, you can make a case that he is the greatest player of all time definitively. No one's ever going to agree one way or the other, but you know what? If he somehow beats the Golden State Warriors, he beat them last year when they won 73 games, and he beats them this year after they added Kevin Durant, sure, he's the greatest player of all time. But I don't think it's going to happen because I just don't think this Cavs team, as good as they are, even comes close to the talent level of the Golden State Warriors. It really is remarkable what we're watching.
It is, and I think it just goes to show you how good the Golden State Warriors are. They're just that good of a team that you mentioned it. They're going up against the best player, arguably, of all time, and they're handling it flawlessly up until this point. Looking to go up 2-0 in the series now, midway through the third quarter. So I just think it's just too much. It seems like, at least through thus far, it's just too much for the Cavs to handle. The Warriors are just too talented. They're too fast. They're too good of a scoring team, and they just don't have the bodies. Cleveland is, that is, to guard them and to put up with them through a seven-game series.
631-888-8811 is the phone number to call and get involved. As Dan just said, giving you an updated score, 86-75, 7:03 to go here in the third quarter. The Golden State Warriors still leading the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Golden State Warriors have not lost a game this postseason, and you know, we touched on this, we mentioned it briefly at the top of the show, but if Golden State goes up 2-0, and right now it looks like we're headed towards that direction here, if they go up 2-0 and you look at what's happened this postseason, you look at what happened in the regular season, I think a case can be made that this is now the first time in the history of the NBA where the regular season was more compelling than the postseason. The only reason why the regular season was more compelling was because we were having a debate over who should win the MVP, either James Harden or Russell Westbrook, when meanwhile, everyone always agrees that LeBron James is the best player in the world, and that if LeBron wanted to win the MVP and exert himself through an 82-game season, he could. Instead, LeBron decides to coast through the regular season because he knows the only thing that matters to him at this point in his career is winning a championship.
So if this series goes five games and the Warriors win it in five, what does that say about the rest of the NBA and the state of the NBA heading into the 2018 season?
I don't think it's in a good place. And you have Adam Silver was on a bunch of different talk shows arguing that our ratings are up and the popularity of the game is great. And all that may be true. But when you're a fan of an individual team, right? I'm a Knicks fan, or you're a Nets fan, or you're a fan of the Portland Trailblazers. Throw out a team. And you look and see how far away you are from even coming close to the Warriors. And the Warriors aren't just this team that was put together to win a title and they're going to break up. Kevin Durant is not even 30 yet. Steph Curry is not even 30 yet. Draymond Green is not 30 yet. This team is young. They have the core in place, all in their prime. The Warriors aren't going anywhere. And the problem, if you're a fan of a team that you're trying to beat the Warriors of, not only are they not going anywhere, but you know the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're the only hope to stop them. LeBron's only getting older, and I know he's still great, and I know he's going to be able to lead a team to the finals for probably at least the next two seasons, maybe more. He's great. But he's no longer going to be the guy that can just carry a team and put his team on the back in the postseason. Yeah, LeBron's great, and he needs some help, but you know, father time comes to everyone. So while the Warriors are still young, the Cavs, led by LeBron James, are only getting older.
So how long does this run last?
I don't know.
And what does it say about the NBA, and you referenced Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, going on a lot of radio shows, and he was kind of saying before game one that trying to sell the point that there is parity in the NBA.
And you can't sell it because it's not true.
You can't. It's a lie.
This has never happened before where the same two teams are meeting in the NBA Finals for three consecutive years. And everyone always talks about, well, you know, the Celtics-Lakers in the 80s was great for the NBA. They never met three straight times, and that was about Bird, and that was about Magic. This is about Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Clay, Draymond. This is an all-star team going up against one singular force in LeBron James.
But don't you think there's something to this? It's not even just the fact that they're meeting for the third straight time. It's the fact that they walked their way into the NBA Finals. Both these teams walked their way into the NBA Finals. They lost a combined one game.
Great
if we saw two competitive seven-game conference finals, I think we'd be a lot calmer with the fact that these two teams are meeting for the third straight time.
We thought they really had to grind their way there, and they were truly the best team. They fought through it. They got there. We look at them differently. But we already knew since July 4th on, when Kevin Durant decided to ruin all our July 4ths and sign with the Golden State Warriors, we already knew the NBA Finals matchup. We joked on the show that night, I remember, saying, hey, you want to do an NBA Finals preview in July? We could if you want. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, where else is there a sport where you already just know the teams are going to play and the playoffs mean nothing? The playoffs started in April. We've been waiting for June this entire time to start just so we can get this finals matchup. And I just want a long series. But if Golden State and Cleveland's making a run here, they're only down by four with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. But, you know, if Golden State goes on to win a series in just five games, it's boring. And it's not good for the league that you have this super team in place and every other team is kind of just sitting back going, eh, we're not good enough to beat them. The Celtics decided to not make a move at the trade deadline because they knew that Cleveland was better than them, and even if they got by Cleveland, you know, what does it really matter? You're running into the Golden State Warriors. So it's tough. If you're an NBA fan, you know, I get it. You like watching great basketball. The Warriors are fun to watch individually. But if you're a fan of a team sport and you know your team has no shot, I don't know how it's good for the league.
It's not good for the league. And when you have the majority of the teams in the league, I mean, the majority of teams in the league, that it's not like, well, they're not good enough to get to, they have no shot. Like, they don't have a chance to get to the finals.
Like, your season means nothing.
If they play their best basketball against the Warriors in the Western Conference or against the Cavs in the Eastern Conference, you're still going to lose in five games or six games. It's not like we see a team upset LeBron or we're going to see a team upset the Warriors. There's not going to be a team that upsets the Warriors. We thought maybe it could be the Spurs. And once they lost Kawhi Leonard, they had no chance. They had no chance. They led by 22 points in game one. It seemed like they never led the rest of the series. Didn't lead any games.
It's been a brutal series. I mean, the Warriors not only did not lose a game, but Cleveland only lost one game. I mean, the Warriors set the NBA record for the best start in postseason history. They were 13-0 entering tonight's game, too. 13-0. How is that good for parity? How is that good for the league?
It's not. And to hear Adam Silver, and I think he's done a great job with the NBA. I think he's done a very good job as commissioner since he took over a couple years ago. But let's be real. There's no parity in the NBA. The same two teams are in the finals for the second straight year, for the third straight year, and the two teams walked there. They walked there. What two teams combined in a championship series lose one game on their way to the finals?
It's unheard of.
It's almost like you're just saying, it's almost just validating what we said all along, that LeBron and the Cavs are clearly the best team in the Eastern Conference, and the Warriors are head over heels the best team in the Western Conference, and we knew it a year ago, and we're all right. And all the people that defend the NBA and well, it's great and this and that, and you still got to play the game, it's garbage, because these same two teams dominated all season. Well, I don't want to say all season, but that brings up another point.
Well, it's
point.
Even worse. The Cavs decided not to play and get the one seed.
Exactly.
Because they knew it didn't matter. And we all knew what would happen when they faced the Celtics in the playoffs. They won in five, should have been four. They decided not to play hard in that game three. And you give Boston credit. They found a way to not get swept in that series.
And that was a one seed. Like, which team was the one team? When the one seed?
Yeah, Boston was the one seed. And Cleveland went up there and demoralized them.
Killed
in
them.
Games one and two. Destroyed them. It wasn't even competitive.
No, the games weren't even fun to watch.
I mean, it's just
The worst Eastern Conference Finals I've ever seen.
Also, the entire playoffs as a whole, we said this before, but let's break down the series for a second. We had a Game 7 between Boston and the Wizards. Who cares? We knew neither one of those teams had zero chance of getting past the Cleveland Cavaliers in the East.
You're spot on.
Look in the Western Conference. We had one Game 7. It was the Clippers and the Utah Jazz. Who cares? We knew that neither one of those two teams were going to get by the Golden State Warriors. They had the right and the honor and a privilege to lose to the Golden State Warriors, and that's exactly what happened. So you look at what's been going on in the NBA playoffs. They have been boring, and you hope the NBA Finals are good. You hope this Game 2 can wrap up and Cleveland can find a way so we can have a long series here, but it has not been a good NBA season. And the finals, that they're not good, it just goes back to what we've been saying. Now, this has been one of the more disappointing NBA seasons I think I've seen in my lifetime, if not the most disappointing NBA season. And I don't know what you could really do to change it, because we just outlined it. The Warriors aren't going anywhere. This young core is staying together. They're all in their prime. Durant's not leaving. Draymond, Clay, and Steph aren't going anywhere. They're going to get paid. Steph's getting paid this summer. I mean, you look at what's happening right now. I don't see a scenario where the Warriors, at the minimum, aren't the best team in basketball and back into the NBA Finals competing for another title a year from right now.
It's just the state of the NBA. It's not a good place, I think, for when you're selling a team sport. The worst thing to have is to have two teams that just dominate their respective conferences the way the Cavs and the Warriors do. I mean, the Cavs dominate the Eastern Conference so much that they didn't even need to be the one seed, and they still walk their way through the playoffs.
It's been a joke, and the Warriors right now on a bit of a run. They're up 93-82. They're actually up 11. At one point, Cleveland in this quarter cut it to just 4 points. Warriors getting hot. Steph Curry just had a fantastic cutting layup to the basket that I just watched. And, you know, this one, you know, you're looking a lot like what we've been discussing, not very competitive as we head towards the fourth quarter. But we'll see. There's still time. We, though, have about 5 minutes left in the program, and we haven't discussed what happened in baseball yesterday. So I think it's only fitting that we wrap up the show talking about a great moment in Major League Baseball, and that was Albert Pujols became the ninth player in Major League Baseball history to hit 600 home runs. What does that mean? Well, more people have walked on the moon than have hit 600 home runs. So what an accomplishment by Albert Pujols. He's been a great player. To our knowledge and everyone else's knowledge, he's done it clean. He's done it the right way. And we knew he was special early in his career, but now you look at what he's been able to accomplish in his career, and it's very fitting that he was able to get 600 home runs in grand style with a grand slam. He's been a great pro, and I'm very happy for Albert Pujols. He's always represented baseball the right way, and you know, I'm glad that, you know, he got proper recognition for getting 600 home runs. Not that much buzz about it, but really cool moment yesterday when he hit that grand slam, and I'm glad that Albert Pujols had that moment for himself.
Absolutely. I mean, Albert Pujols, one of the most fierce right-handed hitters of this generation. I mean, from 2001, 2011, he averaged 43 homers, 127 RBIs, and a .328 batting average. That's unbelievable. And it brings up, you know, who else is going to get to 600 home runs? Miguel Cabrera, he's probably going to get there. But outside of that, when are we going to see another guy hit 600 home runs? It's going to be a long time until we get another 600 home run guy. It just doesn't happen anymore. We're starting to see home runs go up the last couple of years, but for the most part, it's not a home run game anymore. Guys aren't hitting the ball out of the ballpark, you know, 43 times a year on average every season. It just doesn't happen anymore. So congratulations to Albert Pujols, 600 home runs, and you said it, a Hall of Fame career. He will be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No question. But it brings up a question that we should talk about here. Why was his quest to 600 home runs barely talked about in sports media? You know, it wasn't until he got to 599 that I realized, oh my God, he's only one away from 600. And I remember when A-Rod was going through it for 500 and when different players made their quest, the Bonds chase, of course. And we knew Bonds, he was probably taking steroids in his career, and there was some suspicion there. And even with A-Rod when he got to 600, but you knew it was coming. And maybe because we were in New York, but even still, I think people cared. Albert Pujols, nobody talked about it. And I think my opinion on what happened is, you know, the steroid era, it kind of ruined everyone's kind of interest in homers. No one talked about it, no one cares, because you know, you look at the home run list, Albert Pujols, the ninth player in MLB history to hit 600 home runs. Well, like six of those guys are connected to steroids. So,
and that's the problem.
And that's a real big issue with this list. And to Albert's credit, he is not. But it just seems like the general public has lost a lot of interest in home runs and big milestones involving the home run.
I agree. And even though Pujols has never been, admitted to using steroids, or he's never been, you know, proven that he ever used steroids, I still feel like there's still a perception that maybe he did, and we don't know yet, and it's still yet to come out about Pujols. I always got that feeling that even though we don't know, maybe, you know, people feel like even though we don't know yet, maybe it will come out down the road, so I think that may be holding it back. But it is a tremendous accomplishment. 600 home runs, and you mentioned it. He did it with a grand slam last night.
One final minute left in the program. Quick finals update for you. Warriors lead 96-84, so Golden State is up with 2:55 to go here in the third quarter of Game 2. So obviously, you hope the fourth quarter is closed, as we've been saying, and we'll find out. Hopefully, the next time we're on the air, we're talking about a great NBA Finals. But you know, who knows the way things have gone with the NBA this season. But we are just about out of time, Dan. I thought this was a fantastic show. Thank you to all our callers for chiming in. Thank you to everyone who watched on the Facebook Live page. We appreciate all your comments. This has been Sports Talk 1240. Make sure you check out the podcast available at sportstalk1240.com tomorrow. And you'll be able to listen to anything you may have missed here in the program. But he's Dan Butik. I am Jake Asman. Special thank you to Anthony Leo and Brian Graves for pressing all the right buttons. We'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to Sports Talk 1240. So long, everyone.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.